The CBC presents Canadian Snapshots. Canada. Its people, its romance, its good humor, and its colorful attractions caught by the lens of the radio camera as it sweeps once more across a nation's vast panorama. And an orchestra playing special music under the conductorship of Samuel Hurstenholm. Time is here. June, the month when the vacationist hits the trail for his summer holiday.
Aye, and the bunniest trail of them all is the Cabot Trail, skirting the northern shores of Cape Breton Island.
Begins beside the lovely waters of the Bedore Lakes at the village of Bedeck. Bedeck, forever sacred to the memory of that great genius and benefactor of the human race, Alexander Graham Bell. On the slopes of the beautiful hill Ben Bray, he built his summer home, and on its summit, he directed that he and his wife be buried.
When I die, lay me on the top of Ben Bray, that I may sleep forever under the blue skies of Cape Breton and hear the sound of the golden waves of Bedore lapping against the shore.
A sacred spot, and one that has earned the worldwide fame. The yachting waters here have a continent-wide reputation. And on a winter day back in 1909, the first successful aeroplane flight in the British Empire was made off the frozen surface of the lake. The man at the wheel was a Canadian, J.A.D. McCurdy. Great men, great events. All these have been part of Bedeque. And yet it remains a quiet lakeside village of tranquil beauty, much as it was 70 years ago when Charles Dudley Warner came to it, the man whose book first made it known to the outside world.
On the Sabbath, such a quiet pervaded the street of Bedeque that the fast driving of the gales in their rattling one-horse wagons, crowded full of men, women, and children, released from church and going home, was a sort of profanation of the day. It was Indian summer, and the magic of that calm season of the year lay upon the beautiful village.
Yes, we spent a beautiful holiday in Bedeque back in those summer days of 1873. An interesting holiday, too. There were always plenty of quaint characters to talk with in Bedeque. For instance, the man I met on my visit to the rural jail of the town, the dreadful prison hoose, as the Scotch people called it. But a more inviting place to spend the summer in, a vicious person could not have. The keeper of it was an old, garrulous, obliging man and kept codfish tackles alone. I think if he had had a prisoner who was fond of fishing, he'd have taken him along as company on the bay in pursuit of mackerel and the cod. If the prisoner had taken advantage of his freedom and attempted to escape, the jailer's feelings would have been hurt, and public opinion would hardly have approved the prisoner's conduct. Anyhow, the jail door was hospitably open, and the keeper invited me to enter.
Here's the yard, Mr. Warner, where the prisoners take their exercise each afternoon from 2 to 5.
Do you mean, Mr. McDonald, that you have to keep guard over them for 3 whole hours? That seems very wearisome.
Well, but there's no need of watching over them. No prisoner would try to escape.
But the holes in the fence. Any enterprising pig could go through them. They're a strong temptation.
I'll grant you that. They're a very sorry sight, Mr. Warner. But at the next court, I shall ask the commissioners to stop them up. you can... We've got to keep out the dogs and cats.
Oh, of course, yes. You must keep out the dogs and cats. By the way, have you any prisoners here at the moment?
One, Mr. Warner. A pleasant man he is, too. A carpenter put in jail on suspicion of stealing a buffalo robe. He's still amongst us, sir, but he's not so anxious for his term to end.
Not anxious to get out of jail? In heaven's name, why?
Well, Suppose you come yourself and ask him.
Well, thank you, Mr. MacDonald. I shall.
This way. Here's the prisoner. Mr. Jock McPherson, this is Mr. Warner.
Well, how do you do, Jock?
I'm glad to know you, Mr. Warner.
Mr. MacDonald informs me you have no wish to be released from jail. Well, that's very curious, and I'm anxious to know why.
Well, it's like this. I've got your wife outside. You see, I became acquainted with a French woman once, and I married her.
Oh, yes?
I wanted to go to Boston to work at my trade. Yeah, but she would not go. No, not she. Nonetheless, I went. But she wouldn't have come to see me. So in 2 or 3 years, I came back.
Uh-huh.
Things didn't go very well. As a matter of fact, I never have. I can't make much out of it. But I suppose a man's got to live his life. Is that not true?
Perhaps so. But you'd better try to mend matters when you get out. It won't seem rather good to get out and see your wife again?
I don't know. I've got peace here.
Well, perhaps I can help you. What's the trouble between you and your wife?
Trouble enough, Mr. Warner. Man, she's a yelper. Aye. She's the lewdest yelper this side of Scotland.
From Bedeck, the Cabot Trail leads northward past Lake Ainslie through a landscape typical of the Scottish Highlands and through the Margaree Valley, famous for its salmon pools and sunsets. Along the shores of the Gulf of St. Lawrence, it reaches the fishing village of Chattercombe, where the descendants of the French Acadians still retain their native language and their homes cluster together in old world style.
Women of Chattercombe retain a rare skill in old handicrafts, too. They know well the art of hooking rugs and weaving from native wool that has been carded and spun on wheels that are family heirlooms. You can buy the most beautiful specimens of their work. In fact, home handicrafts are a feature of life in Cape Breton, for the Scottish women are every bit as capable as their French neighbors at these ancient arts.
A little beyond Chattercombe, the Cabot Trail enters the Highlands National Park, one of the two new maritime members of Canada's family of national playgrounds, 400 square miles of rugged, untamed mountain area. Here, against a background of the sea in all its changing moods, the trail skirts along the edge of cliffs hundreds of feet high, along the island's northern coast. The scenery is breathtaking. There are wild, hilly regions with great gray parapets fronting the sea. Then, sudden gorges, bays and inlets, rippling slopes of treetops, age-old rocks that muck the vagaries of man, and small pastoral valleys watered by noisy rivulets. On the eastern shore, there are shadowy glens, fern-lined ravines, and little mirror-like lakes. The view is everywhere one of continual change. A wonderland of seascape and landscape.
The park is but newly opened, but there are opportunities in plenty for fishing of all kinds, hiking, boating, bathing, and motoring along the 60 miles of the Cabot Trail within the park.
Outside the park on the island's eastern coast, the Cabot Trail skirts the shores of St. Anne's Bay, a bay where there are memories of great deeds This is where, in 1909, the first North American tuna fishing record was set up. A huge fish weighing nearly 700 pounds.
Aye, and memories of great men, too. Have you never heard of Angus MacGaskill, the Cape Breton giant? He's buried in the bay at Englishtown. He stood 7 feet 9 inches in height and weighed 425 pounds. MacGaskill toured the world with Barnum and Bailey Circus, and his partner was the celebrated General Tom Thumb, the famous midget, who would dance on the giant's hand, which was 6 inches wide and 12 inches in length. There are many stories told about his feats of strength, but one of the best is that about his meeting with a bragging boxer. But let me read about it in the quaint words of his biographer, another native of Cape Breton. One day, at the time when MacGaskill's fame was dawning, a renowned fighter put in his appearance. MacGaskill soon suspected something, but made no remarks. He entertained the stranger in true Cape Breton style.
Will you know, hey, another sip of the tea, Mr. Hogan?
I don't mind if I do now, Mr. MacGaskill. Don't mind if I do. So, you're the biggest and strongest man alive.
Aye, That's what the folks say, Mr. Hogan.
And that's just what I've come to prove, Mr. MacGaskill. Perhaps you're the greatest fighter, too?
That's a matter of doubt, Mr. Hogan.
Well, it won't be a matter of doubt any longer, MacGaskill. I'm here to fight you.
You compliment me, Mr. Hogan, but I'm no fighting man. I'm a devout Presbyterian, and our religion teaches that pugilism is an abomination in the face of God and fraught with many evils.
Sure it is now, especially for them that fights with me. Maybe you don't feel like fighting me.
You've heard my opinion of fighting, Mr. Hogan. I trust you'll respect my feelings on the subject.
Your feelings have nothing to do with your being afraid, have they now?
You mean I'm a coward, Mr. Hogan?
Speaking plainly, I do.
It's hard words you're speaking, Mr. Hogan. Very hard. But for your sake, I must again refuse to fight with you.
For my sake? Ha! It's your own hide you're after thinking about. The Cape Breton giant's afraid I'll beat him. Ha! That's why he don't want to fight with me. Come on, let's have it out. I'll show you who's the greatest fighting man in these here parts.
Very well, Mr. Hogan. I shall fight you. We'll go out in the fields. Will you now follow me?
I'm coming, Mr. MacGaskill. To show you there's no better feeling, let's shake hands on it. That's what fighting men always do before they fight. There's my hand. Oh, what are you doing?
Did you not want to shake hands?
Let go. You're after breaking my hand.
Oh, man, it's a friendly clasp.
Look what you've done. You've crushed every finger in my hand.
Are you ready now to go out for the boat, Mr. Hogan?
I'm begging your forgiveness, Mr. MacGaskill. I can't fight you, nor can any other man living. You're as strong as Samson.
That's very good, Mr. Hogan. Will you now have another sip of the tea?
Such was Angus MacGaskill, a man whose size, strength, kindness, virtues, and exploits will long be remembered. In his own realm of greatness, he was the Bonnie Charlie, the Wallace, the Bruce, the Napoleon Bonaparte, the Marshal Ney, the Wellington, the Nelson, aye, the Robert Burns, or the Washington of his countless friends, according as they happened to be impressed by the different phases of his greatness.
Yes, a wonderful man, Angus MacGaskill. The echo of his giant footsteps must still be heard along the shores of St. Anne's Bay. But there was another wonderful thing that happened here. From St. Anne's Bay set sail a vessel on one of the most remarkable voyages ever made by man. More than 100 years ago, the Reverend Norman MacLeod had a quarrel with the Church of Scotland, and he came out to Nova Scotia with his congregation. They settled first of all at Pictou, but later they moved to St. Anne's. The minister was a strong-minded man who ruled his flock like one of the patriarchs of the Old Testament. He was over 70 years old when a letter came from his son Donald in Australia. This letter was to change the whole course of their lives.
It will soon be sunset, Father. Shall I call my brothers and gather the sap for the maple trees?
Aye, Mary, but be sure you turn over the pails when you've gathered it. Tomorrow's the Sabbath. We maintain no profit from nature's work on the Sabbath.
Aye, Father. Oh, good day, Mr. Mackenzie. Come right in.
Oh, good day to you, Mr. Mackenzie.
Good day to you, Reverend.
Will you now take a chair, Mr. Mackenzie?
Thank you, Mary. But I will. Is it true the rumor I've heard, Reverend, that you're taking no room for Australia?
That is my intention. Here is the letter from my son Donald. He bids us come at once and join him there. It's the most beautiful land in the world, he says. A land flowing in milk and honey. And what do you think of the proposition?
Well, if you're asking my opinion, Reverend, this is what I think. How long is it now since your Donald left St. Anne's?
I can right well, Mr. Mackenzie. I was only a wee bairn then, 6 years old. It is just 13 years ago.
I'm not superstitious. But there is an unlucky sound to that number, Reverend. Did we not put Donald in charge of our vessel, the Maria, and instruct him to sell the cargo and ship in Glasgow and return to us?
Aye, that we did, Mr. Mackenzie.
And did he not fail to return as he promised? Did he not disappear from your mortal ken until you received this letter?
Aye.
Then, how can we believe his word now that Australia is the bonny land he says it is?
A MacLeod no speak the truth. You're a very presumptuous man, Mr. Mackenzie. Did you lose one single penny over Donald's venture? Did he no send back the money he was paid for the cargo in the vessel?
I complain on that score. But for a man to disappear for 13 years and never to write one word to his parents, it's no decent, Reverend. It's flouting the commandments of God. Honor thy father and thy mother, says the scriptures. A man who can break one of God's commandments can break all of them. Now, I've no trust in
him. Silence, man! Ye profane. I am your minister. Have I no guided ye the right path before? It is my will we go to this Australia. It is God's will. It is predestined. Once more we shall leave our homes and seek our fortunes in another land. I shall be your Moses to lead you out of bondage.
Very good, Reverend. But you're forgetting. Australia's on the other side of the earth. Will you, hey God, part the waters for us so we can walk there by land?
You're a very dull-witted man, Mackenzie. We shall build ships to go there.
Aye, but ships cost money. A great deal of money. Will ye be supplying it?
You ken that I've nae money, Mr. Mackenzie. You've never paid me a regular stipend. But many of you are men of means. Aye, you too, Roderick Mackenzie. I've heard ye hae a very goodly amount stored away. You can help supply the capital to build the ships. And we'll sell our land, too.
Our land, Reverend? Shall ye be ruining us?
Sell it, and ye'll be repaid 100 times. But if ye stay here, ye will be ruined. Ye ken right well trade and Cape Britain's no good. There's no longer a demand for our cattle and our timber. God is watching over us. That's why we've received this letter for Donald. You're a young man, Roderick Mackenzie. You've a whole lifetime to make another fortune. I'm an old man. I am now past my 80 years, but I'm no afraid to set sail again if there's a hope we can better ourselves. We've prospered in Cape Britain. If man be God's will, we shall prosper in Australia. Tomorrow, we'll start building the keel of our vessel.
And so the men of St. Anne's felled trees and built the 500-ton bark, the Margaret. On October the 28th, 1851, the minister, his family, and 130 of his people set sail for Adelaide, South Australia.
And it's here you are, Alec, all alone by yourself at the bow of the ship. You seem very thoughtful to Nick Talek.
Aye, sister. You have read my heart, truly.
Oh, that's no hard task, Alec. When you play Loch Lomond on your fiddle, I know you're all sad. Why are you so melancholy, brother?
Oh, because of a fancy, Mary. A very strange fancy. I feel I'll never reach the promised land.
Oh, dinna you think on such a thing, Alec. Father's been taking observations of the sun all day. He says we're almost there.
Aye, I hear them, Mary. I ken well I'll reach Australia, but not the promised land.
Is not Australia the promised land we're sailing to?
No, your destination is no there, Mary. You'll go to another land, but I'll no go with you, Mary. I'll no go with you.
April the 10th, 1852. After a voyage of 164 days and a sail of 12,000 miles, they reached Adelaide. Adelaide did not suit them, and they moved on to Melbourne. But there typhoid broke out, and some of the emigrants caught the disease. Among those who died was Alec, the minister's son. Once more they sailed on, this time to another island, New Zealand.
On September the 1st, 1854, the first of MacLeod's emigrants landed at Waipu in North Island, New Zealand. And there, beside the white beach, where the majestic kauri trees looked down, they cleared the land, sowed the grain, and planted their vegetables. Today, the descendants of those courageous Cape Breton emigrants who made that unbelievable voyage across 12,000 miles of water live on, some of the most valued citizens of this great dominion under the Southern Cross.
St. Anne's Bay is a symbol of old Cape Breton and of the heroic Scottish pioneers who settled in the island and laid the foundations of its present prosperity. Cape Breton's future is assured, and part of that future must surely be the Highlands National Park. Though the park's development is still in its early stages, work is already progressing to make it one of the finest of Canada's national parks. Administration buildings are being erected within its limits. A magnificent golf course is being constructed, and modern camping sites and tennis courts are also being provided. The Cape Breton Highlands National Park is destined to become one of Canada's most up-to-date vacation playgrounds, just as the old Scotch tune Loch Lomond has become the theme for this light-hearted version.
Thank you.
Cape Breton is one of America's natural holiday lands, a playground set apart from the rest of the continent. In Cape Breton are found the peace and quiet of hill and glen. The encircling sea tempers the atmosphere and provides nights of cooling rest. Here, Gaelic is spoken, and legend holds firm. There are beautiful vistas of lake and valley, age-old ramparts of rock battling the tides, ever-changing panoramas of sea and valley and upland. The spectacular Cabot Trail, the ruins of mighty Louisburg. There are fishing villages to explore, hill paths that call to the hiker, streams athrill with trout and fighting Atlantic salmon, deep sea waters alive with giant swordfish and tuna. Here, too, is the picturesque Highlands National Park, offering views which are the experience of a lifetime. Here, hurry is forgotten. Here, visitors linger. And you, too, will linger if you spend your holiday in Cape Breton.
Canadian Snapshots has been a presentation of the Canadian Broadcasting Corporation and was produced by Ian Smith, with music under the direction of Samuel Hersenhorn. Another album of Canadian Snapshots will be presented next week at the same time.
Radio Canada.
This is the Canadian Broadcasting Corporation.